going to be talking about sort of a democratizing technology that a lot of you may already be using. It really gets some of this high-throughput technology in the hands of people who can use it at a reasonable cost and with reasonable tools for doing the analysis. It really is democratizing in a lot of universities now. Most major universities in the Midwest or anywhere now have these high-throughput sequencing machines, either the Pyro sequencing machines or the Illumina machines. The basic type of technology I'm going to talk about is what's called multiplexed amplicon Pyro sequencing. That's where you take your multiple samples, isolate DNA from each sample, in this case it could be soil, use PCR primers to amplify a specific gene. That could be a portion of the 16S ribosomal RNA gene, or it could be a functional gene that's involved in a specific process that you want to study. The primers that are used to amplify the gene, in addition to having the region for amplifying the gene, have a short tag or barcode or key sequence that's different in each of the individual samples. After PCR, the samples are mixed, subjected to sequencing, in this case 454. The resulting data then can be sorted based on the barcodes and back into the original samples, and the samples can then be subject to further analysis. Now, why do this when sequencing technology is so cheap? Well, one reason is that soil samples are actually incredibly difficult. They're incredibly diverse, and David just talked about some major efforts that are going into trying to do some metagenomics on soils. It's not as easy as one might think. This is a paper by Quinston colleagues where they took some data from the literature looking at 16S libraries, did some parametric curve fitting to determine the number of species in the sample, and estimated how many fold extra sequencing the authors would have had to do just to see 90% of the species in the sample. I've just highlighted one here, a Florida soil. They would have needed to increase their sequencing effort by a factor of 399. That would have been about 11 million reads. That, in next-gen technology, that's about equivalent to one lane of Illumina, which doesn't sound too bad. But now if instead of doing a single gene, if we did the complete metagenome and asked how much would we need to sequence to find 90% coverage of that gene, we'd end up, instead of having to do one lane, we'd end up having to do about 2,500 lanes. And to put that in perspective, I was just at the Sanger Center. They're one of the major sequencing centers in the world. They do projects normally, things like they have a 1,000 human genome project. This would take their whole sequencing capacity for about 2.5 months just to do one soil sample to this depth. Well, you don't necessarily have to go to that depth, of course. The authors of this paper were able to make some really interesting conclusions with much lower coverage. But the same ratio holds. For any depth that you want to go to, you can get a lot more information if you go for a single gene. There are technologies out there that will do taxonomic binning of complete metagenomes. I think we're going to hear about one of those in a talk this morning. And those are great technologies. The current limitation there is that with, say, 16S, we have a library of over a million Sanger sequences to compare to. With other genes, the library is much more shallow. Okay, this is the site that we've put up to help people analyze this type of data. I'm going to go over this very quickly. You're welcome to go to the site or ask me later if you actually have questions. Basically, our programs are breaking up into essentially three phases. There's an initial processing phase where the raw reads are sorted by the key or barcode. The primers are trimmed, and there's some quality checks done. Low-quality sequences are discarded. Then there are two analysis pathways that one can go through. There's a taxonomy-independent or unsupervised method that essentially does clustering and OTU binning. You may be familiar with that. It uses a very fast aligner from Sean Eddy's group, an infernal aligner it's called, that is a secondary structure-aware RNA aligner. Then the sequences are clustered using a custom complete linkage, average linkage clustering tool that we built. You can get a rarefaction curves for your data and some ecological metrics. And more importantly, we output the data in formats that can go right into third-party statistical ecology packages, very, very powerful packages. Our taxonomy-based approach, we use some tools that we've developed at the RDP, the RDP classifier, the RDP library compare program, and the RDP sequence program. SeqMatch is a program that finds the nearest neighbors to your sequences in a library of a million Sanger 16S sequences. Now, we've had the RDP classifier out for quite a while, but it's getting a lot of use now with pyrosequencing because it's extremely fast and reasonably accurate. What it does is it places each of your sequences in the taxonomy and all the different taxonomic ranks from phylum level to genus level. And with relatively long sequences, it's very accurate. Even with sequences of 200 bases, it's reasonably accurate. With very short sequences, the accuracy falls off fairly dramatically. Our library compare program uses internally the RDP classifier, and what it does is it highlights taxa between multiple samples that are differentially represented in the different samples, and it uses a strong statistical test for these. It has a GUI interface, and you can, for example, in this example, drill down from class to order to family, and in each case, the taxa with the red stars behind them are the ones that, by the statistical test, are differentially represented. That's also a very fast program. This shows the rough performance. This is just an example of one pyrosequencing run. The classifier on the 350,000 reads took about 2 CPU hours. To align them with the inferno liner took about 12 CPU hours. Clustering is very dependent on the sizes of the clusters. In this case, they were all about equal sized, so it took about 2 hours total. It's essentially dependent on the square of the sample sizes. SeqMatch program, that took about 23 CPU hours. We have a small cluster. You can submit your runs on our cluster. Give us your email address. We send you an email when the results are ready for you to come pick them up. We've had, since we released the first incarnation of this in June of 2008, we've had about almost 500 users. And these are people who've both submitted actual pyrosequencing data and given us an email address so we know that they're real, that they actually exist. On average, we get somewhere between about 100 and 500 runs with each of our tools per month, depending on the tool. And for example, the aligner, we align roughly 11 million sequences a month. And we've distributed these tools to a number of sequencing centers for their own in-house pipelines. And some of these tools, if you have some bioinformatics support, they're available and just contact us. We're happy to provide them for in-house use too. Now I'm going to switch gears and talk about something a little bit different. After you have your sequences, you've done your analysis, you want to publish your paper. Before you can publish, they want you to submit your sequences to GenBank or EMBL or someplace. What do you do? Because GenBank doesn't want these in their normal archive. They don't want these in their Sanger archive. They want them in what they call their short read archive, or in EMBL they want it in their ERA, European read archive. And it's not as easy to submit to those. Actually, what they do, they don't have any nice user-friendly tools. What they do is they want a whole set of files that look something like this. And unless you have bioinformatics support or really know what's going on with these, it's just kind of gibberish. And they don't just want one file like that. They want a set of 6 different document types, and they each kind of look like that, and they want them all connected in a certain way. So we've had a number of requests for help with that. So we've put together a little website that helps you get all these documents together. This is just somebody's desktop or homepage. Shows all the different files that they've put together. All of the different types. They can edit any of these files, they can delete, they can copy if they want to just make a copy and add a few differences. They have another sample that's a little different. And when you edit, instead of getting that what's called XML format, you get a nice set of basically fill-in-the-blank forms, and you can just then fill in the data. This is an example of one. This is showing some of the attributes that you can add to your sample. In this case, they're the We preload it with the Genomic Standards Consortium attributes. David talked about the TerraGenome soil attributes. They've been submitted to the Genomic Standards Consortium, and so they're part of this also. Makes it very easy to fill in. After you've made all your documents, it still takes a little effort, but at least it's not trying to edit the types of files I showed you originally. After you've done that, you have all your essentially your metadata files together, all those documents. We have another program that takes those, takes your sequence reads, bundles them up together in a nice little bundle that you can then submit to either NCBI or EMBL. And we've had users that have been successful in getting their submissions and getting the accession that you need to either or both of the archives. Now, a little bit on the hidden side of this, and I'm just going to very briefly mention two potential problems. Although these technologies are not necessarily high error-prone technologies, because we're looking at so many sequences, the errors can inflate the diversity that you're measuring. And one has to be aware of that and be careful. I'm just listing a paper where that has a partial solution called PyroNoise. The problem with that is that although it's a potential solution, it's not quite practical right now, but people are working on it. Another potential problem is that, and this is true with metagenome, complete metagenome also, that specific sequences, specific reads, tend to, for some reason in the sequencing process, become amplified. So in your original sample, a read might have been present once. You'll end up with 100 or more identical reads, and that can throw off your diversity and your relative taxa estimations. And there's no good way of taking care of that except to make sure you do replicates and perhaps even technical replicates to make sure that this problem isn't affecting your result. I'm going to basically leave you there and just acknowledge the people who helped with this. I'd like to especially acknowledge Chris Hunter at EBI EMBL, who helped us greatly in getting our MyRDP prep kit for submitting the sequences ready. Thank you. Some of these tools will work fine with eukaryote sequences. One thing we don't have is an aligner for example, 18S. But we are also doing, I didn't mention, helping people with various functional genes. You can just email us or write, and we don't have all that stuff online, but we can help with that. And for eukaryotes, it would be fairly similar. And we are trying to get together, I should mention, this is still in the works, we're trying to get together some support for fungal ribosomal RNA sequences. And I'm not sure when we'll have that online, but at some point we're hoping to get something.
There's a question. Question for you or anyone else in the audience. With these high throughput methods, and you said the democratization of that, I'm not as familiar with this research, but I hear that corporations or individuals are blasting and patenting the DNA that they get just blindly in hopes of getting something in the future.
Yeah, that I don't know much about. I think there are limits on what you can patent, and you have to have some rationale for when you patent.
You have to show utility.
Yeah.
You can't show utility.